The following is a Fourth Hand production.
A one, a two, a one, two, three, four. Hysteria Nation.
Listen to me. The human world, it's a mess. Life under the sea is better than anything they got up there.
Monsters.
It's always
bigger
in somebody else's lake. You dream about going
to space,
but that is a big mistake. Just look at
spaceships and aliens
right here on the ocean floor. Such wonderful
extra-dimensional beings
around you. What more are you looking for? Under the sea, under the sea, darling, it's better down where it's
weirder.
Take it from me,
man. I'm a really good singer. Oh, and the meat sacks are talking unidentified submerged objects next, on Hysteria 51.
They say, I'm disturbed.
From city to city, an incredible hysterical panic spread.
I think we're getting into a weird area here.
Will you tell these fools I'm not crazy? Not crazy!
This hysteria.
You can't handle the truth!
Brain is gone.
This is Hysteria 51. The truth is out there.
It's alive.
But you won't find it here.
They're coming for you. Look, there comes one of them now.
Welcome in Hysteria Nation to the podcast that's never seen a USO. But that doesn't mean we're going to go looking. This is Hysteria 51.
My boys call it the Black Lagoon, the paradise. Only they say nobody has ever come back to prove it.
Broadcasting from the lower fourth dimension, otherwise known as Chicago, we are your hosts and head divers into the deep, Brent Hand and John Goforth.
I'm rooting for the crocodile. I hope he swallows your friends whole.
John! I'm excited for tonight. I've been wanting to do this one for a while. USOs.
I can tell you're excited.
Unidentified submerged objects. Now, of course, we've done an episode on sea monsters,
yeah.
Which obviously, you know, some of these are going to be
definitively,
sea monsters.
Definitively,
yeah.
100%. The Kraken.
But, you know, what if some are something else?
If I had a dick, this is where I'd tell you to suck it.
I feel like you didn't mean Betty White.
There's something down there.
What do you think he saw?
Pretty sure that clip from The Abyss didn't clear it up either. But we're talking about aliens, of course.
Right,
USOs are just underwater UFOs.
That's exactly right.
Thank you. And you would know that.
That felt weird to say.
I know, it hurt a little, didn't it? You would know that. I would know that. Our listening audience, our friends on the other side of the earbuds would know that if the third member of this team would ever do his damn job.
Don't get uppity with me. I'm not in the mood.
That other voice you're hearing is the third host of the show and the least likely to enjoy a tour of a magnet factory.
Conspiracy bot.
Magnet factory. Are you trying to give me bad dreams?
I built C-Bot in my lab to help make this show great.
Instead, he makes crappy jokes at our expense and hunts neighborhood cats.
Just doing my part to make America great again.
What the hell are you talking about?
I don't think I want to know.
I'm making America great again by hunting down the neighbor's cats. They're vermin and they need to be gone.
I feel like this is leading somewhere. I'm stepping into a trap, but is this why you're in a bad mood?
Well, yes. You know the Hannigan's Three Doors Down?
I'm here without you, baby.
You're a fucking idiot.
You're welcome for that. Anyway, the Hannigan's have a new kitten and that damn thing is evasive. I've been hunting it for weeks and can't get to it. It's quite possibly the next step in feline evolution.
Okay, number one, I told you no more hunting of the neighbor's cats.
And I said no. Go on.
He's got a point. All right, hold on, Brent. Hold on. I want to hear him out. I want to hear him out. C-Bot, what is the cat doing that's so revolutionary to you?
Well, I'm going about this in my normal predatory way.
Well, rolling back and forth in front of the house with catnip in your pinchers?
Exactly. And not only will it not come out, but I threw a brick through the window and it still won't come. We're dealing with something special here.
So you broke... I can't laugh at that. So you broke the neighbor's window?
Shattered, really.
Dude.
Brent, I think you might be getting a phone call and potentially a large bill.
No, they're too scared to even come here anymore. Because he sits in the window with his eyes glowing at night.
Neighborhood watch is serious business.
It's too bad that... It's too bad they don't listen to the show. They would know how non-threatening he really is.
Unless you're, you know, a cat or a human near him. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. All right, but before we destroy him, let's get into tonight's topic.
All right, you're right, John. What the hell is a USO? I mean, everyone knows, or at least I think they know, what a UFO is, and that's something that we kind of always, you know, you have your saying. What's your saying about UFOs?
Well, I mean, we all have to remember that UFO does not mean alien.
Oh,
that's
shit.
It.
It's not what my MUFON Monthly told me.
Yeah, I mean, I know you probably hear this. If you listen to the kind of World of the Weird podcasts, you probably hear this a lot, and you're probably annoyed with hearing it. But then everyone hears it, yet they don't follow it. They're like, UFOs, do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do. No, well, UFO, I mean, it could be an airplane.
In a UFO. It's actually Super Satan. He flies.
But anything.
That was the Super Devil. I don't know if you watched Family Guy, sorry.
I'm trying to skip over your reference here. I'm just trying to get past it. But you won't. You're like a roadblock that grows.
Maybe with Futurama. I don't remember. Super Devil.
That's why I was trying to get past it. I remember the Devil Robot when Bender went to Robot Hell.
Yeah, that's true too. Yeah.
Love that episode.
Finally, somebody you can get along with. Yeah.
Yeah. That's tough but fair.
Yeah,
Another thing, right? I like to say. But no, the point is this. When you see a UFO, it doesn't mean aliens. It can. It also can mean an airplane. It also can mean an animal of some type.
A pie plate, a saucer thrown through the sky, a kite, a weather balloon, swamp gas, Venus reflecting off the rays of the sun, sun dogs up in the clouds.
What the fuck is a sun dog?
A sun dog is like this thing that happens.
I know what a sun bear is.
No, it like comes through the clouds. It's like refraction of light and shit like that. I don't know.
Is that like when people take a picture and they're like, God is smiling down on us?
Yeah.
And it's like the ray of light shooting through?
It's like you're watching a movie and there's a lens flare, but it's in the sky. It's like crystals.
Well, it's
and they
the
make
same
like those
thing
circles.
As a movie because we're living in a simulation.
That's true.
Don't forget that.
It's a simulation inside a multiverse.
So if you're watching a movie, how many times removed are you from reality?
Yeah. It's like, I am the top from Inception. Like, God damn it.
It's funny. I always thought of you more as a bottom.
Yeah. How about that?
Anyway, so as we say that about UFOs, keep in mind a USO is a show where Bob Hope does comedy.
That's right. So if you want to know what a USO is, let's take it away. Wikipedia with the Wikipedia definition of what a UFO is. An unidentified submerged object.
USO. You said UFO.
Damn it. That's going to happen a lot.
Just keep that in because it's going to keep going.
An unidentified submerged object, a USO, is an unidentified object submerged in water. Thank you, Wikipedia. Exactly. It's okay. It's okay.
That's what we're talking about for the rest of the show, right?
This doesn't, just like John said, this doesn't necessarily refer to an object of paranormal origin. It just means there's something under the water. You know when you're out there swimming in a lake and something brushes against your leg? That's a USO until you know. Now, it's probably a fish. It could have been something way more, wait for it, nefarious.
Like that weird uncle?
Right. Where's the fun of that? I mean, the fun is in the not knowing, right? When someone goes, well, actually, that was just a trout. Like, okay, sure. But everyone knows that there's 600-pound man-eating catfish by the dam. My uncle's cousin told me so.
Right.
You know?
Couldn't you also say that, for the most part, UFOs or USOs, see, I did it there.
Yeah.
USOs are also UFOs because most of the time, they've been... at least initially identified outside of the water, and then they go in the water.
Which is something we'll talk about, but a lot of times with UFOs, they're near water, they're sucking up water, they're coming in, going out of water. So that's kind of a dual thing, but that doesn't always mean so. It doesn't always have to have been that way.
True.
And like I said, your minds automatically go to flying saucers, but underwater, these, you know, submerged flying objects. But that's not the only thing that can be a USO. John, what are some other options here in the USO handbook?
Kicking it back old school, almost 50 episodes or over 50 episodes. 52 are sea monsters.
Yeah.
Sea monsters could easily be USOs.
Yeah.
Other anomalies.
There's all sorts of things that make pings when they're underwater and you don't
know. And refract light.
Yeah. One of those things that might ping back to you, a submarine. But until you know what it is, that can be a USO. Seabot's Lord and Savior, Cthulhu. Yeah.
That's an obvious one that we all know exists, so I don't know if it's unidentified at this point.
I mean, all those monsters that came out from, what was that movie? Pacific Rim.
Yes.
Until the two things that they really were fast at, figure out how big they were, and then naming it something stupid.
The
new monster's out. His name, Blockhead. Well, who's naming this shit? Like, someone in the military had that fucking designation.
Were they the kaiju?
Yeah, the kaiju. Yes, monster.
So I tried to watch the sequel to Pacific Rim twice in a hotel. Two different hotels, two different times. And I didn't make it through either time. When you're in a hotel, you're bored out of your mind. You know something is boring when you fall asleep during it twice in a hotel.
You think that Charlie Day brags about his Pacific Rim job a lot? You got it twice?
Yeah.
See that? It's low hanging, that fruit right there.
That was low hanging fruit.
You know what else could be a unidentified submerged object?
What?
Atlantis.
Oh,
we are so to think that it's actually submerged.
Because we all know that it's in Southeast Turkey, better known as Göbekli Tepe.
Yeah, that's right. What are some other things? Like, when you think about this stuff, what are some other stuff that could be on there that we don't know about? Well, I mean, the funny thing is, the Marianas Trench is the lowest spot on Earth that we know of. And years ago, and then not as many years ago, we've sent people down there in like the 50s or 60s. We sent a sub, and then James Cameron went recently. But the first time they go down there, they get all the way down there, and they're like, well, there's nothing that can live down here. Turn on the lights. And they turn on the lights, and shit just scatters. Because it's down there.
So, yeah, obviously, lots of sea life could be a USO.
Yeah, it wasn't that long ago that a mythical creature to us that we thought knew existed was the gigantic squid. And we've now found a lot of them, but we've also found a lot of whales with sucker scars that absolutely dwarf those things. Who knows how big they are, and we catch glimpses of stuff on radar.
I think this is the second or third time you've told that story on this podcast. I think you're just into squid hickeys.
Squid hickey.
Yep.
That sounds like a small town sheriff. Squid hickey, private eye.
So, I think another, if we're talking about USOs that eventually could be identified, meaning they aren't aliens or something like that. Mm-hmm. Another category might be USOs of our own creation that we don't realize.
Right.
The number one thing that's going to ping off of various radar and certainly reflect light would be various metal objects that we have dropped or accidentally thrown down there.
Boats, people
don't
planes.
Right, exactly. You know, and people don't realize what they are.
That gorgeous, gorgeous Amelia Earhart, wherever she's lying around. You know, I mean, it's just pinging. Just pinging. It's too soon.
I can't. Why gorgeous?
Why not?
You're talking about a corpse.
Well, she was. She wasn't. That was the part of the joke.
I
mean, maybe she was for the day. I don't know what people look like.
I don't know what problem I have with it, Brent. I just know that I feel dirty after it.
How many times have you had to say that to friends and loved ones?
More than once.
You know what? We've talked about a USO on this show before. If you remember right.
Wait, I know what you're talking about. The Millennium Falcon.
Yeah, the underwater Millennium Falcon. Episode 83, the Baltic Sea Anomaly. Everyone knows it's the Falcon underwater.
It is. We saw the pictures online. It was very detailed out by some really good Photoshoppers.
Now, granted, the sonar equipment that they used was dropped in the water, quit working, and they had First Mate Lucky Louie try to solder it back together, and then they got those messages and pings back
from
it.
Hey, how's the sonar working?
It's good.
This is sonar?
Did you fix the whole thing?
It's good.
Would you say that you'd like pork and beans for dinner?
Is good.
Can you say anything else other than is good?
Is good.
All right, we're going to go find the Baltic Sea Anomaly now.
I fear because of my accent you find me to be inferior. I have a double PhD in microbiology and electrical engineering. I stutter.
Is good.
Yeah, the Baltic Sea Anomaly is just that, an unidentified submerged object that may or may not be there. It might just be a rock formation. It might be an old base left by the reptilians. It could be a crashed ship. Oh, it's It could be.
Could have been a UFO skid mark.
Literally, that is part of it. They thought, you know, it didn't just come straight in. It kind of skipped.
First it had to burn up the hundreds of feet of water that it would go through so it could actually hit the bottom.
It's so hot, it flash boiled.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
The stench was god-awful.
Which actually brings up a good point about USOs. You have to really want it if you're an alien or some other being that is actually operating a USO. A UFO, there's a lot less resistance. Think about how much extra energy it takes to navigate around in the water with a large object than
once
it does in
you
the
have,
air.
Man, I can't even believe I have to explain this to you. Once you have mastered traversing time and space, you've realized that you put yourself into a time bubble and you slip through the fabric of time and space. Water's no different, John. I mean, you should know that.
Are you okay over there?
Are you having
a stroke?
Hey, did you make something with almonds? Now, so what is the difference, I think, is the big question, you know, we're talking about here between USOs and UFOs.
Again, one is in water, dumbass.
Yes.
That is true.
He's accurate. It's one of the few times on this show he's been accurate.
That is true. But what I was getting at is, like you were saying, they kind of go hand in hand, and you talk a lot between the two. Many UFOs are seen near water, and in some cases, even, like I said before, siphoning water. That's one of the things people think that, like, maybe that has something to do with the propulsion system. Help, maybe they're just thirsty and they desalinize it if it's over, you know, whatever. Maybe they dump the pool after every day, like you're on a cruise ship. They got to refill it, you know, and so they got to go to the closest planet with water. Don't know.
Or like Dave Matthews Band's tour bus in Chicago a decade ago when they dumped the commode
sometimes
into the Chicago River on an entire boat of tourists.
Yeah. No lawsuits or anything came from that. I wouldn't worry about it.
What was the movie where they have was it X-Men? They've got a large plane that they're all flying around in, but first the entire lake opens up, the water drains off, and it takes off from under it.
Well, I mean, so they had that in X-Men, but it's like the basketball court. But there's other things too. Yeah, what was that? It did come out of water. There's also an old Aliens movie where they come to Earth and they're leaving and they have to dump weight and they dump their toilet over this field. And the next day, the corn is like 4 foot tall, like the ears and stuff. And I forget it. I forget the movie, but it was like a children's movie with aliens in the 80s or early 90s.
I'm going to go with Aliens.
Yeah, that was it. Feel good. Feel good.
Yeah.
Get away from her, you bitch. Yeah, but many, many, many UFOs become USOs or start out as USOs because they're seen coming in of or going out of water. And it's a funny thing because water is such a mysterious, mysterious thing. Like, it's terrifying. We don't know what's down there, and there is stuff in there that will eat you. It just will. Like that, we are not the top of the food chain in there. We're very much lower to the bottom. What is it about water, John? And what do you think? Like, why do you think when we see these UFOs that become USOs or USOs that are leaving, what could it be about water?
It's easier to hide. So if they could have bases down there, we wouldn't know about it. There's what do they say that. I don't know the percentage off the top of my head, but it's in the 80s or 90s percentage.
Not explored
of the ocean.
Yeah.
So it'd be much easier to hide than on firm land. It also provides an opportunity. I was joking earlier when I said, you know, air resistance versus water resistance. I mean, I suppose depending on your technology, it could be much easier to just scoot around in water.
It does get the looky-loos out of there, like you said. It's funny, speaking of movies, I just watched, coming up for this, I watched Cocoon, because they were, you know, their ship wasn't in water, but they were underwater. And it's funny because they hire Steve Guttenberg to take them to their spot, and they give him a map, and he's like, the hell is this? He's like, it's a map. It's like, this is completely mapped surface of the seafloor of Earth. He's like, I got it from a souvenir shop or something like that, you know. It's like, but they're just like, oops.
Going back to how they get around, in whether it be by sea or by air. Mm-hmm. Conceivably, if their technology was advanced enough, they could be using water as a fuel source.
Yeah, it could be a fuel source. It could just be, you know, something that they break down for propulsion. Maybe it is something that, I tell you what, it's an abundant resource on this planet. Fresh water isn't, but water is an abundant resource on this planet that, man, think if we could use that instead of fossil fuels to get around. Hell yeah. Hell yeah. And there's always been talk about people that have used, you know, he made a car that ran on water and then he was silenced, you know, which, hell, that's probably
a future
upcoming episode, you know. So it's one of those things where what you don't know with water is a lot scarier a lot of times than what you do, because I don't care what you're doing, your mind, you know, runs circles. And if we can sit there and say that the moon is a hollow base, it's, oh, this, that, and the other, because it rings like a bell. Well, who's to say? That was a violent ring, John. Who's to say that it couldn't be underwater bases too, which to me would make a hell of a lot more sense.
It was a violent ring, Brent, because I'm tired of this bullshit conjecture. I want solid examples.
Well, guess what? We're going to go to the break. But after that break, we're going to give you examples coming up on Hysteria 51. How's that for a segue?
That's what I was trying to set you up for, because I saw your next thing said examples.
Hola, David. Me amo Brent.
Bonjour, Brent. Je m'appelle David.
You didn't do Spanish. I thought if we were going to do this together, we'd do the same language.
Oh, sorry.
that's on brand for us.
I just thought romance languages was the key.
Everything I say is romantic, and that is thanks to Rosetta Stone. You guys, we've been touting these things forever. We love Rosetta Stone, and we actually are users. David, you've really been using it even for longer than I. What's your experience been like?
Oh, it's been great. The thing is, you really get to learn how to speak and think in that language with it. So it's very high on pronunciation too. So you can, you know, learn how to speak.
And you know, our show is all about proper pronunciation.
In that pronunciation. Yeah, that's right. But they design it for long-term retention, you know, if you don't get the pronunciation right, you say it until you do. And then, you know, that just seeps into your head.
Well, and that's why, you know, this has been trusted by experts for 30 years, and there's over 25 different languages that you can learn, and people, millions and millions of users use it because, like you said, it does seep in, and you're using it with, you know, you get speech recognition and mm-hmm. it hears you. You get to use like the built-in true accent features that gives you this pronunciation, which is super convenient, and you can do it at your own time. And I don't know if you know this, but I'm all about value, and you get a one-time purchase, 25 languages. If I learned all 25 languages, I'd be so confused. Or really cool. I'd go in and out.
But you'd be real marketable.
But literally, though, this is something that we use, and both of us have given the seal of approval because we want to do this long term, and it's something that it works, you know. And we don't do long term stuff like this. And this is the one that we've chosen, and we love it. So, all you guys got to do, don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now, as we've told you 1,000 times, and it's always now. Right now, get started. For very limited time, Hysteria 51 listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off.
How much?
50%. Visit rosettastone.com/today. That's 50% off, unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your unnatural life.
Wow.
Redeem, redeem, redeem. How do they do it?
Rachete, you're 50% off. Rachete. Redeem it. 50% off, rosettastone.com/today. Do it today. After years of fine print contracts and getting ripped off by overpriced wireless providers, if we've learned anything, it's that there's always a catch. So when Brent and I heard that for a limited time, all Mint Mobile wireless plans are $15 a month when you purchase a 3-month plan, we thought, man, what's the catch? But after talking to them, it all made sense. There isn't one. Mint Mobile's secret sauce is that they sell wireless service online. They cut out the cost of retail stores and pass those sweet savings directly to you. Brent is trying a plan right now and says that it works like a charm from Chicago to Nashville as he makes his big old move. Mint Mobile is working for him. All plans come with high-speed data and unlimited talk and text delivered on the nation's largest 5G network. And you can use your own phone with any Mint Mobile plan and bring your phone number along with all your existing contacts. So ditch the overpriced wireless with Mint Mobile's limited time deal and get 3 months of premium wireless service for $15 a month. To get this new customer offer and your new 3 month unlimited wireless plan for just $15 a month, go to mintmobile.com/hysteria. That's mintmobile, mintmobile.com/hysteria, hysteria. Cut your wireless bill to $15 a month at mintmobile.com/hysteria. $45 upfront payment required. New customers on first 3 month plan only. Speed slower above 40 gigabytes on unlimited plan. Additional taxes, fees, and restrictions apply. See Mint Mobile for details.
Hit me. I want the examples. I still want them.
Aliens, John, are our bread and butter on this show. I don't think that's... I mean, we talk about a little bit of everything, but that's our bread and butter. And luckily, aliens and USOs go hand in hand. Kind of like...
Or claw in claw.
Yeah, or you know, globuloid to pus sack.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's just a bit... If you listen back to our alien species episode, this is a, you know, you'll learn all about globuloids and pus sack.
Aren't those your pet names for each other? And producer Lisa.
Yeah, she's winking. Yeah, that gets her all randy. Oh man, so there has been a lot of people over the years that have seen USOs, just like UFOs. But there are some big ones. There's some big examples of people that can see them all the way back. We're going to start with one, a cat you might have heard of. You know, he brings up a lot of back and forth. People like him, people hate him. Christopher Columbus, the Santa Maria, the Pinta, and some even say the Nina, though less people say it, saw a USO.
I learned about this in school. In 1492, Columbus sailed the ocean blue and got attacked by aliens.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. And claimed India, which happened to be America. It's like, we're the first ones. Excuse me. We're the first ones here. You mind moving blanket? Yeah.
No. Oh God.
No, it's evil. That's why I said he's a very polarizing person.
So what, did he see something?
In 1492, there were sightings of an unknown light during the first voyage of Christopher Columbus. It actually happened on October 11th of 1492.
Wait, we don't need to go any further. I know what it was. It was his conscience escaping his body.
Yeah, exactly. Definitely the crew members of the Santa Maria and the Pinta, and people say the Nina. I don't know why that's such a big thing, but I guess the more people that saw it, the more likely it was. And if you know, Columbus kept his journal, and he described the light as a small wax candle that rose and lifted up out of the water. And his son Ferdinand also characterized it as a candle that went up and down. So, John, what was it? What do you think?
Acid trip. Really bad acid trip.
That was what they were getting from the East India Trading Company at that point in time. Yeah. I didn't know that was around then. So a lot of people, you know, when they're looking at what it could have been, they say it could have been bioluminescence. There's a lot of things that give off light, things like that. But a lot of scholars, figuring where they were at that point in time, have kind of ruled that out. And it was actually probably a misidentified land sighting. Like, they were actually near land then and just didn't, hey, there's a light. It must be an alien. No way there's land over there. You know,
our map says India is still at least 500 yeah, whatever away.
Right. So they say the light was probably a light on Guanahani, and others say it was not Guanahani, the island of the first landfall, but another more easterly island that they bypassed in the night. And they,
it was literally a native going, hey, ship,
yeah,
over like, here.
Yeah, exactly.
Over here.
Why
don't you avoid being at sea for a whole bunch longer and getting scurvy and come over here?
Or it was just them like out cooking, out doing whatever, you know, minding their own business. They see it and, you know, go, oh my gosh. This one is one that people go, Columbus saw USO. And then you read into it and you go, well, it's not nearly as exciting as you'd hoped it to be. Because it kind of gets explained away readily easily, but who knows what it really was? Well, then tell us, you bastards. So there's the other one, and this is the one, and I was telling some people that we were doing this episode, and everyone goes, you doing Shag Harbor? You talking Shag Harbor? And I'm like, well, we're going to talk, and we're not only doing a Shag Harbor incident, but this is a big one.
Yeah, baby. Yeah.
That was an obvious one, C-Bot. We appreciate it nonetheless.
So the thing about Shag Harbor, this one, it's got a stamp made after it. I mean, so obviously, this is a big one. Right?
It's legit.
It's an interesting one, to say the least, and it's one that gets a lot of attention. It's a reported impact of an unknown large object into the waters near Shag Harbor. Now, if you're thinking, where's Shag Harbor because I want to move there? Well, it's a tiny fishing village in the Canadian province of Nova Scotia, and it happened back on October 4th, 1967. Little long ago, but not quite 1492, but it's still a few years ago. But here's why this one's interesting. And it's...
anthropologists would call it CE, current era.
That's true. I just call it back in the day. So it's interesting because these reports were investigated by a lot of people. This isn't just one of those things where they go, I think I saw something, Pa. Well, keep it to yourself until you die, and don't tell anyone.
Oh, you mean Roswell?
That's our way. Yeah.
Which this is actually referred to as the Canadian Roswell.
Yeah. Various civilian and non-civilian, like the Royal Canadian Mounted Police, Canadian Coast Guard, other forms of military, the Royal Canadian Navy, Royal Canadian Air Force, agencies of the U.S. and Canadian governments, and even the U.S. Condon Committee, which we talked about on another episode.
But what was
talked about this?
The Condon Committee was that part of Project Blue Book?
Yeah, looking into reported events. Guess what they said? Nothing to see here. Yeah, but we've got nothing to see here.
It actually sounded more like this, Brent. Nothing to see here. Nothing at all. There's nothing going on here.
That's my cell phone. What's a cell phone? Damn it! So the story in a nutshell is people over there in the area started seeing a UFO, or they saw like this yellow light, and something crashed into Shag Harbor. And at least 11 people before the crash saw a low-flying light heading towards the harbor. Multiple witnesses reported hearing a whistling sound like a bomb, kind of like, you know, the exactly. Then a whoosh and a bang. Yeah, like something was going into the harbor. Now, these aren't just like the people hanging outside looking for UFOs. These are just people going about their business. And the big thing about this is,
well, no, they'd be looking for USOs, Trent.
Well, at that time, this was a UFO that was flying through the sky, John. Now, the object was never officially identified and therefore referred to as an unidentified flying object in government and Canadian documents, and the Canadian military became involved in the rescue and recovery effect. Why? Because you have all these people going, something flew through the sky, crashed into the water there, and we saw lights on it. There's an initial report made by local resident Lori Wickens and four of his friends. And so they're driving through Shag Harbor on Highway 3, and they said that they spotted this large object descending into the waters. They went to attain a better viewpoint, and Wickens and his friends saw an object floating around 250 to 300 meters or 820 to 980 feet offshore in the waters of Shag Harbor. So he actually contacts the Royal Canadian Mounted Police Detachment in Barrington Passage. Tells him what he's seen. I like to think that Dudley Do-Right is who they were talking to.
That's time. Who it was? Okay. Yeah. Okay.
He's like, hey, I saw a plane or some sort of airliner crash into the waters of Shag Harbor. Holy shit. I mean, that's a big deal. And
it's also oddly specific. We've talked about these before in UFO episodes. 250 meters above the water.
So I looked into this offshore, not above the water, like how far offshore. So a lot of these things, they'll take boats and go out and you tell them about how far it out and they'll figure it into that. Now, that's a little easier to believe because how far was it offshore? Well, between this and this.
About there, eh?
Yeah. Wear boots. So they actually scramble into action and they form a search and rescue operation. And within half an hour of the crash, local fishing boats went out to the side of the waters to look for survivors, and they couldn't find any survivors. They couldn't find bodies or debris. It was all taken off either by the fishermen or the Canadian Coast Guard. They were looking through this area, and they said that they found debris, some people say, and it was cut. It was taken away.
That sounds familiar.
And then the Coast Guard, Canadian Coast Guard and a rescue cutter arrived about an hour later from nearby Clark's Harbor. Here's the problem.
What?
By the next morning, it was reported that no planes are missing, but everyone said, well, that's too fucking bad because I saw something go down to the water. Keep looking. That's a hell of a thing when you go, I saw a plane crash. No, you didn't. Well, these other dozen people did too. No, they didn't.
Look into this light.
Yeah, exactly. So 2 days after the incident has been seen, a detachment of RCN, Royal Canadian Navy divers, from a fleet of diving unit in the Atlantic was assembled. And the next 3 days, they combed the seafloor of the Gulf of Maine off Shag Harbor looking for the object, along with U.S. Navy divers who came in to aid them. The final report, no trace of anything. Nothing was ever there. You saw nothing. So that's fun.
When you said let's do USOs for a subject, the only one that I was like familiar with, other than the Baltic Sea anomaly, was Shag Harbor. Mm-hmm. And this to me is the most interesting USO out there. I actually find this one more interesting than the Baltic Sea anomaly. Mm-hmm. From a okay, then what was it? And what the reason I find it that way is because I don't really believe in mass hysteria. Hey, I'm not a huge, like, you know, all of these people from different walks of life in different geographic locations saw the same thing and, oh, that was nothing. You're all crazy. So something happened. And that's why I find reports like this so much more interesting. And I also find it more interesting than, like, say, Barney and Betty Hill. That, I mean, that one's a little better because it's two people, but most of the time it's only one. Mm-hmm. It's not to say that someone like Travis Walton, Fire in the Sky, it's not to say that someone like him is lying. I don't mean that. I just mean that when you have so much more corroboration of story.
Especially people that aren't directly involved, they just go, yeah, I saw that and I called it into the police. I called the police too. I called the police. Then the police are like, let's look. And the military's going, no, you don't need to. There's no plane.
That's why I enjoyed the Phoenix Lights so much.
Yeah.
Thousands of people across the state.
Yeah.
You know.
Including a flying Wyatt Earp.
Yes. I prefer Snake Plissken, thank you.
Well, you know, everyone has their faults. You know? So here's the thing. That's a really interesting thing because you said that you actually dig this one. The next one's my favorite. I actually like this one better just because it's a little more weird to me. And this is the Norwegian USO. There's a lot of names for this one. But in a nutshell, this is my favorite of all time. In the waters of Norway and Sweden, there have been observations of unidentified submerged objects for a long time, going back to, you know, like World War II and before. And that was scary because Nazi U-boats were everywhere. We know that. We know. I mean, shit, they were.
They
doing.
Still are.
Well, I mean, depends on, you know, where those holes from the hollow earth open up at.
I saw Iron Sky.
That's true. But for real, though, that was something that people were keeping an eye out for U-boats for a long time. Well, this takes place over in Sognefjord. So let's go over some of the facts of this place. And there's a lot of names like Sognefjord. There's a lot of fjords over there. So this is an interesting one. Sognefjord is the largest fjord in Norway, second largest in the world. It runs 127 miles long and heads inland. The maximum depth of this bastard is 4,291 feet. That's found inland. So it's deeper inland. It's deep, damn near going on a mile deep. And near the mouth of the fjord, adjacent to the sea, there's a sill and there's a riser, and it sits about 350 feet below sea level. And cliffs surrounding the fjord reach heights of about 3,300 feet or more. So it's kind of this boxed in, beautiful thing. If you look up pictures of it, it's very pretty, very deep, very large. And it's kind of, you know, in the middle of nowhere. And so this Norway Navy and some NATO forces are involved in this 2 week long observation and pursuit of a USO beginning November 12th and goes through the 22nd of November 1972. And in all, about 30 naval vessels participated in the search of the fjord for this thing. This is documented. There was something in there. What that was is up for debate. Now, a lot of people at the time, they were afraid it was a U-boat. They thought it was a Russian U-boat because this is the time of a very heightened Cold War, if you remember right. And NATO and all these people are like,
well, I don't. I wasn't alive.
Well, you know, we've seen X-Men, Days of Futures Past, so we know. It's actually unclear how this all began. Some say it was started with a sighting of a Russian sub. Others say an unidentified craft was witnessed flying, then disappearing below the water's surface. Those are two very different things, both equally scary at the time. But on the 13th, two unidentified witnesses reported seeing a bright object on the water. And generally speaking, most reports say that a fast-moving vehicle was picked up, presumably on radar, off the coast of Norway. Remember, like I said, tensions are high in regards to the Soviet Union and its intentions at this time. So if anything's picked up, they're going to look into it, and it just so happens you've got NATO and all these people here. Well, somewhere along the way, it entered the waters of Sognin Fjord, where the Norwegian Navy began to track it. They had these specialized sub-hunter helicopters that they brought in that, you know, look for subs.
So it's not just a clever name.
Yeah, right. The Soviet U-boats especially. And they were previously seen in the fjord, U-boats, so they knew that they... Well, this is something that we might better take seriously. They were seen in the fjord and along the areas around the Norwegian coastline. So the Navy was familiar with seeing them, trying to force them to the surface. They'd done it before, you know, as far as seeing them. So they had a plan of attack. Jump to the 20th, and it's seen on the surface of the water. And this is when they first get a good look at it. And it's described as a massive, silent, torpedo-shaped craft. Now, to me, that sounds like a more modern day submarine when you look at it.
Right.
But what's the Navy do? They fire at it and it dives into the water. So they fire depth charges at it, which depth charges are just explosions under the water. And explosions underwater, when you're underwater, mess you up. No effect is noticed. It keeps on its way. The Navy decides to blockade the fjord because it's easier to manage operations in this shallow water rather than that 4,000 plus foot deep inland. They know it's in this area. We're going to blockade the water, keep them in here, we can figure it out. Now, if there had been a Soviet vessel in the water, it had been trapped. A craft that could fly or do some other shifty stuff? Well, maybe it wasn't, but
well,
they knew that.
Not necessarily, because the Soviet vessel could have already left.
But they were tracking it on radar at this point in time. They knew whatever it was in this vicinity area. At this time, it's not disappeared. They know where it's at.
Okay. I have problems, but go ahead.
That's you can have lots of problems. We can do that on another episode. I think we're going to have your family here for that one, though. So November 20th at 1, USO was seen headed towards the fjord's southern tip. Then 15 minutes later, police officers saw it at Kvasmoy, a small island about 31 miles north of where it had been. So if they were seeing the same object, which radar was the only things they could pick up, it would have had to travel at 124 miles an hour or 200 kilometers an hour. And at that time, that was an impossible feat given the technology of the day. At that island, some frigate ships dropped mines at this USO they saw, and they said it had no effect and it just kept going. So then the night of the 21st, four witnesses saw four rockets shooting from the water at Hermansverk. And the rockets were silent and looked like red balls of light. So this thing is all over doing shady stuff, supposedly. And then on the afternoon of the 22nd, the Navy fired an anti-submarine missile at the USO. And at that point, the water's depth of 82 feet. So it caused a shockwave up to 10 miles away, and any conventional submarine would have been severely damaged, required to surface, or destroyed. The one they were tracking appeared to be unscathed and kept going. Throughout this two-week episode of everything going on, alleged reports came in of aircraft experience and unexplained electronic problems. Yellow and green lights were seen flying along the mountainside. Navy vessels registered sonar contact with something in the deep water. Surveillance craft witnessed unidentified objects that executed breakneck maneuvers even during fierce storms. And eventually the USO disappeared and the Navy abandoned the search. So the big question is, where did it go? And John, here's the next question. Did it take off into the sky to avoid the blockade? Or was it blown to smithereens and we just don't know? And was it evil aliens or was it evil Russians or just nice aliens and we didn't know what we were doing?
So I don't love this story. And the reason I don't love this story is...
Because I said I do. Keep going.
Yes, that's the primary reason. But the secondary reason is the lack... In 1967, I guarantee you they didn't have it on radar the entire time. It's a way that people tell a narrative. You know, like, we could see it.
I was talking about that at that one point in time.
No, I know. I read about this thing too. Mm-hmm. You're not going off script. I'm just telling you that that's the way the story is portrayed. And the if they really had it on radar the entire time, they could have just gone straight after it. Like, it would have been much easier to address. Right. It was cat and mouse, and
which they
during
they,
that the, cat dur-
but
during
they
that
it.
Cat and mouse
they did a blockade, so right. They should have known. Well, at least it's in this area,
right? But during that cat and mouse, during the time in which they couldn't see it, it could escape whatever it is. Mm-hmm. I really think this one really was a submarine.
So how did it go 124 miles an hour, and how did it escape a blockade when it was trapped into a smaller area?
Again, I don't think it was trapped. That's just my thought on it. And the whole 124 miles an hour thing, they're using deduction. It's not mm-hmm. like somebody had a radar gun, right? No. If it was seen here and we think we saw it there, to go from point A to point B, it would have had to have traveled that fast. They're using deduction versus, I mean, it's not like we have a, like I said, a radar gun.
No, we just have experienced naval anti-sub people that are saying this, that are, I'm just playing devil's advocate sure. here. You know, they are trained to do this where we're not. So it's one of those,
and experienced military people shot at a shadow in the sky in the 40s in L.A. I mean,
did they shoot at something in the sky that we don't know about? And it was...
At the end of that episode, you said it wasn't.
Hey, who knows? I'm just telling you, we don't know. Everything we say, we don't know.
No, I
We're
know.
We're using
I,
deduction. You know what I mean?
But you asked me, and that's my thought on this story.
I'm pushing back at you because it's fun.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
No, that's my thought on this story. I just think there's...
Yeah, it's almost like we keep talking about with this one. Over time, I'm sure it's been embellished a little bit. And who's to say? Here's the other thing. We looked up to see how fast a sub would go. And one of the best things I could find is back in 2014, the highest in subs would go about 46 miles an hour, 40 knots. That is a hell of a lot slower than they're claiming this thing went a long time ago. Now, granted, it was probably a U.S. craft of some sort, which was old by that time. Because and it ran on re-engineered, back-engineered shit from the 40s and Velcro, because that was from the aliens as well. No, who knows? That's a big leap.
The one other thing that's worth noting about this story is the story does come from the Norwegian Navy and NATO, meaning it comes from two military-like organizations, and they don't generally release reports that say, yeah, we've got no idea, we kind of screwed up, we weren't good at tracking it.
As opposed to the U.S. and the Canadian, which we go, we saw something, they go, no, you didn't.
plausible deniability.
Yeah. Hey, no, it's someone might be hurt. They're not.
They're fine. My point is that the official government organizations like that don't tend to put out stories where it makes them be in a bad light. That's my point.
Now, so, you will see, I will say this, pushing, but not pushing back on that at all. When we go to other countries outside of us, it's like Israel and some others have put out some stories about UFOs where there's like, we don't know what the hell this is.
Oh, that's true. You're right. You're 100% right about
it's
that.
It's a little bit more, and I actually agree with what you're saying. I'm just saying the only caveat to that is it's not the U.S., so there is a little bit less of that swinging dick. You know what I mean?
I think it's more human nature rather than U.S. nature to try to save your own ass and put out a good narrative.
Instead of poo-pooing on this, I'm just saying I think it's a fun story. It's my favorite if any of that's true. There's so much more than vehicles. These ones that we've talking about Columbus, Christopher Columbus, who knows what that was. The other two, they were, you know, vehicles. Something was seen crashing. What if it's something else? Well, there's stories about that too. And we're going to go to break, but when we come back, we're going to talk about what if it's something that's not coming from outer space, but alive down there.
Ooh. Ooh.
We're going to get to that after the break on Hysteria 51. I'm alive down there. Yeah, that's right.
No one wanted to know that.
Ask producer Lisa.
Our bodies come in different shapes and sizes, so doesn't it make sense that our weight loss plans should too? That's the beauty of Noom. They build a personal plan that factors in dietary restrictions, medical issues, and other personal needs so your plan works for you. Noom doesn't restrict or shame when you want to treat yourself. Their flexible program focuses on progress instead of perfection. You don't have to give up carbs or anything. And with their daily lessons, you can learn something new about your food choices every day. After just a few days of using the app, I learned how to recognize cues for overeating and how to choose the right foods to feel full. Stay focused on what's important to you with Noom's psychology and biology-based approach. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com. And check out Noom's first ever cookbook, The Noom Kitchen, for 100 healthy and delicious recipes to promote better living. Available to buy now wherever books are sold.
Hey, you know that thing you said right before the break?
Oh, about you being worthwhile host, co-host? Yeah, I get it. I'm sorry.
No. That was during the break when you're begging me to stay.
This is the land of make-believe. All right. Here's a big one, an underwater anomaly that, man, this thing made the rounds. Were you familiar with this before?
Absolutely.
The bloop.
It's a great, great example of onomatopoeia.
I'm sorry you dropped your dangling participle. I thought we were just throwing out English terms here.
No. Mrs. Brownback would be proud.
No, exactly. Mrs. Brownback.
I do remember. It's onomatopoeia. Poetic.
Onomatopoeia. Keep your hands to yourself. No, that's a different song.
I think there might have been a Schoolhouse Rock about onomatopoeia.
So the bloop was an ultra low frequency and extremely powerful underwater sound detected by the U.S. National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, NOAA, which we're going to call it from now on, in 1997. And like I said, this one took the internet conspiracy boards by storm. Less conspiracy and more, what was that? You know, people love to talk about it. And let's give them a taste. Let's actually play the sound for them. Now, that is a sped up version of it, because this is it's almost one of those things that if you didn't know what you're listening for, you probably just like, what was that? You know,
right.
But it's interesting, this thing, because according to NOAA, it rose rapidly in frequency over about 1 minute and was of sufficient amplitude to be heard on multiple sensors at a range of over 3,000 miles, meaning it's fucking loud.
At first, it really got the blood boiling of cryptozoologists.
Yeah.
Like, oh, it's a cryptid.
Well, and here's a reason for that. So NOAA's Christopher Fox, he was interviewed by David Woolman for an article in New Scientist, and he did not believe its origin was man-made, such as like a submarine or a bomb, nor a familiar geological event like a volcano or an earthquake. And Fox stated that the audio profile of the bloop does resemble that of a living creature. Boom. Salivation of,
yeah,
of
exactly.
That type. And the source was a mystery because it would be far more powerful than calls made by any animal on Earth. That's a hell of a statement. So there was nothing at that time known that could make underwater sounds travel much further than they would above land, but still, thousands of miles, that's a hell of a thing. And Woolman states in the article that Fox initially speculated bloop to be ice caving in Antarctica, but later came to believe the sound was of animal origin because, here's a quote from Woolman, Fox's hunch is that the sound nicknamed bloop is most likely to come from some sort of animal because its signature is a rapid variation in frequency similar to that of sounds known to be made by marine beasts. There's one crucial difference, however. In 1997, bloop was detected by sensors up to 3,000 miles apart. That means it must be louder than any whale noise or any other animal noise for that matter. Is it even remotely possible that some creature bigger than any whale is lurking in the ocean depths? Or, perhaps more likely, something that is much more efficient at making sound?
Enter Squid Hickey, Private Eye.
So the thing is, this totally goes in with those people that are going, like, today I saw someone put, did they find a megalodon in the Marianas Trench? No! People just say that. Of course, it sounds great to say, we don't know what's down there, but it's probably evil, and we're all going to die. I mean, because we don't know. This has kind of been the theme of the show, is what we don't know, we don't know. And what we do know isn't that much. You know what I mean? And so it is scary. This is just ripe because you've got a scientist saying, sounds like an animal to me, but no known animal. And then scientists are going, yeah, yeah, I kind of get that. And then everyone is passing this around, and man.
But then they finally, they did come to a conclusion.
Yeah. So in 2002, it was said that it would be consistent with large marine animals, although it was also consistent with noises generated by ice quakes in large icebergs or large icebergs scraping the ocean floor. And then fast forward 10 years go by, and in 2012, NOAA goes, guess what? It was ice related. And that's all that it was. So that's the accepted thing, is either one of two things. NOAA's right. They work with HARP. They're the ones who were fucking with the weather. They broke that chunk off. So they knew exactly what it was. Or it was just Cartman and his buddy.
Hey, dude! Dude, over here! Hey, Cthulhu! Stop!
That is more likely. It was a Cthulhu fart.
Ah, we finally agree.
It was just they're about a minute long and can be heard from thousands of miles away. I don't know. Oh, man. So when you think of USOs, what do you think of? What's that term make you think of?
It does. It makes me think of UFOs that are doing most of their navigation underwater.
Yeah.
I don't think of cryptids or other live animals.
Which it can be.
I mean, I know it can, yeah. But that's not what I think of.
And that's funny. Me too. I fall into that unfortunate thing of I do the same thing that we tell people not to do about UFOs is I just go, oh man, yeah. Yeah, but anything that's underwater that we don't know about, just like anything in the sky.
But that's also, I think, a
ISOs is an unidentified submerged object. We know what it is.
I think a reason for that is how fewer of them there are. Go try right now. Go Google USO and find as many examples of USOs that seem halfway legitimate as you can. Then do the same thing with the term UFO. And it's 100 to 1, 1,000 to 1.
Easily explained by they're real. So that is being dumbed down so we don't find out what's going on.
That's true. That's true. But
use your fucking brain, John.
I rarely do on this show. But my point in saying that is there are so fewer examples that our minds are obviously, you know, your brain is set up to do one thing, and that is complete puzzles. It wants to fill in the gaps so it has a complete picture of everything that it's observing. And so
funny you say that. And when we don't see everything, your brain fills it in.
Right. And so the examples that are out there of USOs are, generally speaking, are what we described before, the traditional thought. It's not like we've got all these other examples of, like, in the UFO world where there's things happening in the desert that we know are really the American military. There's things happening over Russia that we know are the Russian military. There's even if some of them are aliens, we know that some of them aren't. We don't have all of these examples. There's so many fewer USOs. And so that kind of pins us into a corner as to what we think they are.
Right. And that's to be expected. You know, you look out in the water and you go, I don't know what the hell that is. No, it's just Bigfoot going for a swim. I should have known. Like, oh, that's all it is. Yeah, but it's all joking aside.
No, but joking aside.
all joking aside, a lot less of them are seen for a couple of reasons. Well, we're not there to see them. You know, we see this guy, you know, we're not over water. It's a hell of a lot easier to fly into water out of our eyesight and track us if this was really aliens. That would be how I would want to do it. You know, from one way or another, you know, I would want an underwater base probably, because put it in a trench or in a cave somewhere, we'll never find it, you know, or we might someday, but I mean, it's going to be a long time.
We did forget to mention the other possibility. I know we said Atlantis before, but that the sightings actually are the Atlanteans that live down there, much like Aquaman.
So I was actually going to reference the movie Abyss. Remember the ending to Abyss?
Where they get down there and all the water drains out?
So you want to see the real ending to Abyss, watch the alternate ending that they were going to use that got thrown out, which I like actually better. The ending of Abyss is all happy. Oh, yay, it's all good and everything, you know. The real ending of Abyss is he gets down there and they show him Hitler and the Nazis and plagues. And it's just, there's a, like, they're projecting these things they've gotten off of television of how horrible the people of Earth are. Meanwhile, the seas swell. And these giant tidal waves pause, ready to destroy mankind. And then it shows on the screen him typing. They've intercepted the, like, I love you, baby. I'm doing this for the better good. I know it's a one-way trip. And they're like, you get one chance. Like, this is it. And they come back up. And then when he gets up there to that military, he's like, yeah, we need to talk. we got some stuff. And I go, it was a lot more doom and gloom, but they still lived. I like that a lot better because yeah. They're like, hey, guess what? We've been here a lot longer than you. We are a lot more advanced. And we're kind of tired of this. So, yeah, knock it off or we're going to knock you off. And then, you know, the seas went back down, which brings us to another thing, underwater Nazis. I mean, that is just, I think.
We think.
You know, they've got their bases in the hollow earth. They can come out wherever they want.
Right.
It's just probably U-boats. By now they call them U-plus boats because so much time's gone by.
Sure, sure.
And they're much better.
I'm glad we've got to the answer. We dug it out.
Oh man! So that I think you can weed.
Who
through
wants
that
to go under the water?
I think you can weed through that and see. Like, we don't know. You know, that's what's beautiful about this. We don't know. We're both hugely skeptical, but it absolutely could be aliens, and we cannot say no.
And we're glad that we were able to concisely and expediently tell you exactly what does happen under the water. Now that you've spent the last hour plus with us,
plate tectonics,
you know it all.
Yeah, Pangea, just start saying things. It's like a flatter centrifugal forward graviton.
Bill Brasky.
That's our thoughts, Nation. What are yours? How can they tell us, John?
Go to Hysteria Nation. It's our Facebook discussion group. Just get on Facebook and search Hysteria Nation.
That's right. And don't forget to hop on Twitter at Hysteria51Pod or Facebook.com/Hysteria51Pod. That's where you can find our regular old Facebook page with this episode, lots of other episodes. While you're hopping on things, don't forget to hop on Patreon. You can get yourself a special edition t-shirt, pins. You can get posters, all sorts of goodies, up all night episodes, special audio dramas that we put out every week. Lots of fun. And guess what you can do?
Well, I don't know what.
You can hear yourself on the show.
I want to.
Well, you just listen because you're on here ad nauseum. But how can they hear themselves on the show, John?
Well, they can call us. They can leave a voicemail. It's 773-669-7277. That is 773-669-7277. Leave us a voicemail. We'll play it as evidenced by the wonderful voicemails we've been playing the last few weeks. Do we have more?
We have a lot more.
Oh, boy. Let's go. Man,
we are going. So here, without further ado, is voicemail numero uno.
Yo, this is Brandon from Wichita again. Skinwalker Ranch. That's the ranch.
Oh.
I'm sure you guys have probably done something on it already.
That's
the
right.
The movie was bullshit. I mean, it was cool visually, but let's stick to the facts.
Brandon,
that,
they're coming for you.
Bob I Bigelow, can hear right now in the background. Dollars bought this ranch. Had NIDS come in. Cameras on poles and shit. Shit kept getting messed with, and something would happen over here, and then they'd get attracted, and the light would go off over here, then they'd get screwball shit going on. Skinwalker Ranch, you should revisit. And what about Bob Lazar? I know you've done an episode about Bob Lazar, but
no, two.
Yeah.
This dude.
We could do an episode of Bob Lazar now, and it's interesting.
He went into, what is that, S4 was the newer place that they were doing
bus right away
alien spaceship, and straight up said that he had seen, you know, different models, the sports car model, the family model. I've seen all these different models of extraterrestrial vehicles. Said he got inside of them. What about Bob Lear? What about what Bob Lear says. He's the heir to the Learjet fortune. And this dude drew out on a old school YouTube video how these things levitate. What, something along the lines of spinning Mercury at a specific crazy speed that we can't even do, and right. injecting... yeah, spinning Mercury.
Hold on. Gotta rip the bong. Hold on.
Something. He pretty much laid all this out. Bob Lazar, definitely revisit. Skinwalker Ranch, what about... you know, Roswell again.
He had hit the bong.
I guess what I'm getting at is maybe you guys should revisit this stuff, because I've listened to all these episodes over and over again because I love them.
I get that. And, I like that. Man, they are coming for the... it cuts out. Man, so John Lear instead of Bob Lear. We have actually... We're working on having John Lear on the show, and then that kind of turned up... But we were in talks with him, and I was emailing back and forth, and then he kind of stopped talking to me. And that dude is out there, 9/11 truther, and the aliens are here, and we're all gonna die. And wow, he's wacko.
You know, the way that Brandon describes a Bob Lazar or a past event is much like when we get an outline from CBOT, when we let him do the
what about this and then
I'm taking a quote from Brandon here. S4, the place where they were doing that space shit. That's the research, the level of research that CBOT provides for us. So
I dig that, though, because Brandon is really excited about this stuff, and I like it. That's how I get when I start digging into something. I almost don't know where to start sometimes on episodes I'm really into, because I'm like, oh, what about this? What about this? I get it. I'm with Brandon. I am Brandon.
Literally, you literally left the voicemail.
Nah, this is Brandon from Wichita. I'm going to Wichita.
You know, S4, that place they're doing that space shit.
I'm with you, Brandon.
I'm not making fun of Brandon. I'm just saying that the way in which he describes things is eerily reminiscent to CBOT and the way in which he provides us outlines.
Liar. I never do shit and you know it.
All right, next voicemail.
Hey guys, congratulations on your 100th episode.
Oh,
finally a Skinwalker Ranch episode. You guys are awesome. And CBOT, would you spare me from the robot apocalypse for a Barbasol vodka and Windex cocktail?
No.
I love you, CBOT.
No.
And I've got a couple suggestions.
No.
We need more Joe Peck and more tugboat noises. Seriously, congratulations. And here's to the next 100 episodes. You guys rocked. I'm glad you're going good. And I want some tugboat noises, please.
Tugboat noises.
I liked the first version, tugbutt.
Tugboat's coming, we'll party tonight.
Well, thank you, mysterious unknown voice. You didn't identify yourself, but that was a great voicemail, so we thank you.
Piss off, lady. I never liked you.
All right. Thank you very much. 100. That kind of triple digits made us feel a little bit more like we're established a little bit. We've been around the block, John, right? I think that's the best way to put it. Well, I know you have.
My wife asked a lot of questions before we got married.
Here we go.
Hey, I wanted to leave a message just to let you know I finally listened to the simulation argument episode, which is a subject I really enjoy and you know read a lot about. And I wanted to say it's interesting toward the end, one possibility you did mention is that if you were to consider
that it's not a possibility,
infinite universe where you know anything's possible and will be possible, maybe what we're observing, including a simulation, is actually just one of those possibilities and it just happened. Meaning it kind of materialized by itself.
We literally had this conversation last
week. Bubbling universes and each universe is infinite. I know it's a little crazy, but you know, that's another possibility compared to, you know, there's absolutely a God doing this.
I'm just pausing real quick because we literally had this conversation.
We're at the Hysteria 51 meetup and we have about 6 or 7 people standing around talking, and I just stopped everybody and say, okay, everybody, got a question for you. You can only pick one. Are we living in a simulation or are we living in a multiverse? And Brent's head exploded because he was so angry he couldn't give both answers.
Because I kind of said what he just said. I know, pretty much, yeah.
And we had this conversation for 45 minutes.
I know, it went for a while.
Now, it doesn't answer the question who created that bubble universe, but just wanted to mention that even within our universe, if it is infinite, you know, sky's the limit is how many things will be simulated or will be happening. Of course, sky's the limit if you believe the Earth is around. I'm just kidding. Anyway, you take care and love you guys. You do an amazing show.
Oh, thank you.
There you go. Something to think about.
The one thing he said that was wrong is the sky is not the limit. The limit is the amount of RAM that we have. How many we can run at the same time.
Well, you know, I hope we're not Linux based. That's going to upset me. I don't know why. I don't know why. But
Brent, it's just so much better than the other things out there. You don't understand. The other operating systems are so limited.
I don't know. One more? You want to do one more?
One more.
Let's do one more. I'm having fun with these.
Hey, yo, Siba. Hey, this is Tony. Hey, man, I don't like you not answering your phone, man. I do this job for you. You know, I go over there and make him not open his mouth so much anymore. You know what I'm saying?
I told you.
And then you don't answer your phone. You don't pay me. And that's not going to work for me, man. So you need to answer your phone, okay?
Fuck this hack pussy bitch. I pay no man.
We have warned
I've
him.
I've been waiting for that to happen.
Yeah, you can't continually contract people via the internet to do nefarious things and not think it'll blow back on you.
I told him to stop hanging out near the Italian Legion. Not to say that was an Italian. I hate to be insensitive. He could have been, you know, from Missouri. Hey, I'm from St. Louis.
Human St. Louis.
Yeah. Yes, I am from human St. Louis. All right, guys. Well, that was... I don't know why I'm having a lot of fun listening to all these voicemails, man. So we got a few more. That's enough for this one. We still got more. And I've only downloaded these. We have several more I haven't even downloaded to play. Yeah, we don't listen to them. So got to get those ready. Again, if you want to hear yourself on the show, 773-669-7277. Oh, John.
I'm exhausted.
Yeah.
Let's call the game.
I'm USO'd out.
It was probably all the shitty voicemails from losers.
And with that, I'm done.
Yeah. With that said, I've been Brent.
I've been John.
He's been an asshole.
Stay woke, meet sex.
It was terrible. It was just terrible. I'll never get over it as long as I live.
That's it for another edition of Hysteria 51. John and Brent will be back next week with yet more of the unexplained, the unexplored, and the unheard of. Oh, if it's unheard of, how will they know about it? Anyway, if you want to suggest a topic, give us your thoughts, or just make fun of Conspiracy Bot, that's my favourite, join us in our Facebook discussion group, Hysteria Nation. Just log on to Facebook and search Hysteria Nation, or you can always tweet us at Hysteria51Pod.
You've been listening to a fourth-hand shine.